Welcome to On, Cultivating Student Engagement in Higher Ed. This reimagined podcast will still provide teaching perspectives related to instructors and students, but will shift toward how technology and innovation add value to the teaching and learning practice. Welcome to part two of this specifications grading episode. We continue with our faculty panel that explores their methods for communicating specs grading to their students, how they reflected in their syllabi, and the student feedback received about this type of assessment. Happy listening as they continue to share their experiences with specifications grading in their courses. Also, remember to tap into part three for the alternative perspective on specifications grading. What are your methods for introducing specifications grading to your students at the beginning of the semester and throughout?
I'm going to join Julie's mantra of doing a kind of hybrid thing, because I'm not confident at all that what I do would, you know, pass some kind of specs grading purity test. The first thing that I do is I try to communicate my system that has a lot of built-in forgiveness and kind of like, so I think what Nielsen refers to as tokens that students can redeem to reperform assignments or to retake certain quizzes. That is something I try to communicate loud and clear when I go through the syllabus on day one. And I think that anybody who's really teaching in higher ed at this point knows that the syllabus has become this weird bloated contract between the teachers and the students, with all kinds of, like, you know, hey, I put this in the syllabus so that I can refer to it later, saying I put this in the syllabus. It's one of those things that I try to be as functional as possible in the syllabus. And actually, Lauren, you've helped me dramatically in shaping my syllabus by kind of highlighting how to put in the different options. One of the examples I can go over is that there's an option in my class, if you don't want to come to class, which is kind of a vital part of my class, to just do a kind of really harshly graded paper. And I make this very clear at the beginning of class. I think I say, hey, if you choose this option, you've got to, you know, turn in 5 drafts over the course of the semester. I'm going to give mostly content feedback, but, you know, the grammar's going to be important as well. And your ability to communicate effectively is going to be. And so I try to be very plain that you don't have to come to class. There's an entirely different option if you want. It's not an appealing option, but it's there as an escape valve for those who need it. I think that's kind of working out for me. I usually get like 1 or 2 students a semester that try it because they have some kind of emergency during the semester, and it's worked out so far for them. And it also kind of helps drive home the point that, hey, if you add up all of the points in all of the assignments, it's way more than 100%. Please don't try to do everything. And that's my way of saying a lot of this is optional, and you need to be the judges of how you run your own life.
So it's interesting. It seems like your flexibility is with giving multiple types of ways to get to the same end goal, right? And you can kind of choose. I'm very much a completionist. Like, if I have a video game, I'm getting every single star and I'm going back until I get every star on that level. And I think I freak out in your class. I don't do bare minimums. Like, that's, you know, like I think I'd get a little nervous, but I think I approach it in a different way. So everyone has to complete every exam. They can do fewer homeworks. That would get them a lower grade if they don't want to complete as many homeworks. But the way I present it to students is more about, this is an effort-based grading scheme. They really like that because my students put in a lot of effort to things usually. We have a very, very high GPA in the biomedical engineering department, and majority of our students are honors. So I think I have a very specific group of students who like that it's effort-based, because I do revisions. And that's a really important thing for my grading scheme that I don't think we've really touched too much on. You mentioned the idea of tokens. I allow 2 of my exams to be completely revised. And I've had students get 20% on one exam and completely revise it and have an A in the class. And I just take the new grade. I completely ignore their first attempt. They can do that to any exam. I will count 2 at the end of the semester. From a didactic standpoint, I see that as learning. I mean, they're instead of moving on to the next topic, they have gone back and relearned the material, and they have to write reflection paragraphs about what they did the first time, what they changed for the second time, and what that taught them. So they have to do that for every single part of every question that they re-answer. So it is, that can be time consuming. It's not necessarily the path of least resistance, but it gives redemption to someone who fails, or in their mind, if fail is a C, if they get one C, then, you know, that's not necessarily going to affect them at all if they have that happen once or twice. That's how I've really phrased it to my students, is it's effort-based. If you have a bad day, it's pretty forgiving. We will literally wipe away that bad day and start from scratch. They have a whole week to do revisions. It's the same exam. Take it home and relearn it. And I think it's more like real life. So I like it because it demonstrates consistency in my students and it allows them, you know, the opportunity to do revisions. They like it because it's seen as effort-based and like a real kind of quote unquote adult job, where I say, you know, you're going to be in a job in 2 or 3 years where you're going to have to write a report. No one's giving you a rubric on that report. They're just going to say, write it. And you're going to try your best. And then your boss is going to give you back a lot of comments. You're going to take those comments into consideration and you're going to resubmit it. And it's going to hopefully be better, right? And you can only do that a certain amount of times before your boss starts to get really annoyed that you haven't taken these comments into consideration. So that's what I try to reflect in my revision process.
I want to jump in really quickly, Julie, because you are spot on. I like that you are building in that skills base, that executive functioning. That is so, so important. And a lot of faculty miss the relevance of that. They make a lot of assumptions that students come to the classroom with a skills based, I know how to manage my time. I know how to prioritize. I know how to keep things organized. So I think that that is brilliant that you're doing that. And you're not going to believe this. I literally just wrote an email to a student, and you're right. I wrote a message that said, when you are in the workforce, you may not always have someone that will talk out exactly what you are missing. You have to be able to look at that written feedback and be able to discern where you need to make your own corrections and give that back. You need to be able to do that. So I think that's awesome. That is really awesome that you're doing that. So thank you for sharing that. Sheldon, did you want to kind of add anything based on, or in addition to, I know you did in the very beginning, talk a lot about specifications grading, your motivation behind that, how it was helpful to you, which supports everything Nielsen said about it being supportive to both faculty and students.
Sure. There are a few points that were raised earlier, just to circle back a bit. One, Lauren, you asked how we presented to the students, and I actually presented first day in the class. I actually have, like, my class is, I had another question I want to make sure I ask you guys too. But my class is about, in a given semester, somewhere in the range of 140 to 150 students. It's a big class. That's what I use it for. So revisions get hard for a class that size. So what I do on the first day is I put up, I have like 4 or 5 slides on specification grading. And I literally go through various scenarios of what it looks like. So I'll say like, okay, here is an A. Here's what an A looks like. You've done all these things. And also in my class too, my rule is if you've done everything I asked you to do for an A, you do not have to take the final. The final in my class is only used to improve upon your grade. So I also, so that I show like, this is an A, and then you have one category that doesn't make it. You take the final, that bumps it up. I explain that part. I explain what happens if, like, you know, I only allow the final to bump up one of my assessment categories, not both, not two. So I explain all these different scenarios along the way. And I explicitly say, this is what it looks like. I also explicitly tell them that Canvas does not allow me to really accurately portray your specification grading. And I try to update grades as much as I can. I have graders who, you know, keep all the homework grades up to date and I put the quizzes in and things like that. But your average that might look different than what your grade actually is right now. And that is why we do this. I do this so that you can see, like, you know, I can know that you're actually achieving everything I ask you to do, not just some of the things that I ask you to do. It's not whitewashed out in the average. That part is really important because if you don't, I found the first time I did this, I didn't explain it super well. And I had, the end of the semester was a disaster. I had so many students sending me emails, and it was all online, sending me emails saying like, I don't understand, why is this the grading scheme now? Or like not understanding that, like what I meant when I said you have to meet a specification, even though it says so in the syllabus, what that value is, like having to explain those things. So I found just a day one here's what it is, really helps. I think doing revisions is great. It's, I think I would love to do it. And when I had the class online, it made it really easy to like let them do a re-quiz because I could put up a new version of a quiz really easy. They were taking the quizzes online. That was really easy. I've now since gone back to paper exams because I want to see them, actually want to see their work rating. And that doing revisions for that is really harder for me. Because right now in my class is the smallest it's ever been. And it's 110 students still. If even 40 of those students decide they want to do revisions, that's still 40 exams I have to go back through and regrade on top of my other two classes I teach. So I don't really have the bandwidth to allow for those revisions. Another reason is why I started doing the averaging, because that at least like one exam is not going to, one quiz is not going to like knock everything down too much. Ideally, in my ideal world, I would have I would have revisions for every assignment, ideally, because then they could just do it again until they get it right. Right. That's the thing that actually draws me to specification grading. They can just keep on trying it until they do it. But the practical limitations of time and resources just don't allow for that, unfortunately.
And your sanity, I'm sure. Yeah.
That too.
Revisions definitely take time. They're usually only revising, and I give the same exam. They're only revising the questions that they need to revise to get it to a 90. And they know that. I tell them, do more work than you need to do, right? Just in case you got it wrong. They can come in and check their work with TAs or me before they turn it in. They generally don't. You know, a lot of my students first shot will get an 86, for example, and then they go back and they revise one part of one question. It's the same question. I have the same grader regrade that one section. So what took 40 minutes to grade the original exam, it generally takes about 5 or fewer minutes to do the regrade, because they also have a paragraph that specifically says, here's what I did the first time, here's what I did the second time, and here's why I was wrong. So you can really just kind of read those sentences and see the new answer and be like, done. It's correct now. So I've tried to make it a little bit easier on our end as well to be able to keep up with doing revisions. But it definitely is an extra burden and an extra time that the graders need to go back and look at multiple assignments.
Can I ask a question? So do you find at all that students like use a revision as a crutch? Like where they'll say like, well, I just don't have to prepare as well for the first time because I know I have a second time in my back pocket.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I think, well, again, it's going to depend on your students. If you have students who, like we said, have been trained since kindergarten to always be high performing, there's not really a lot of like on purpose bombing of the first attempt. In order to do revisions, they do have to answer it originally. So they can't submit a blank exam. I need to see that they've tried the problem. Mm-hmm. There are maybe 2 or 3 students a semester who it looks like they've kind of not tried to study for the first exam, but then they have to really just retake it anyway the next week. So to me, I don't care. Like my goal is for them to show, well, my goal is for them to learn it. And then I need to assess that they learn it. So if they know it a week later than when I magically created a date, I don't really care. It's usually that they're at a conference that week or they have like 3 other exams that day that has caused the original failure of an attempt.
I can also attest to the strength of the BME students. The biomedical engineering students are all really great. So I can see that maybe only a couple might actually do that. I was just curious if that was a thing that came up a lot.
One of the things that I have to comment on is Sheldon's return to paper exams, because especially in exams where there is kind of like a mathy answer, where the answer is either, you know, -1 or, you know, whatever, it becomes very hard to check for cheating. And that's been a thing that I think many of our colleagues have been trying to, like, I hope they don't lose sleep over it, but I fear they have been. And a return to paper exam is one of the few ways to actually guarantee it's a very, very real assessment of a student's performance. And it has its disadvantages because it's a very high stress moment. And so certain students do very poorly in those situations. But nonetheless, it's reliable in the sense that there's also lots of comparables in history that you have to compare that outcome to. I struggle with that because in an ethics class, there aren't many, you know, wrong answers. I find it hard to scale this process of feedback, wherein I give students the opportunity to like do a, some kind of assessment or to perform an assignment, and then kind of give them feedback so they can kind of do the assignment over again, extremely time intensive for a class in which, like, in an ideal universe where I had all the time in the world, the answer to every question would be a mini essay. And neither I think, nor the students have actually the bandwidth to do that. For example, so I talked about kind of the essay option in my class earlier. One of the things that I do is I try to do effort grading by fundamentally asking them to create a Google Doc and share it with me before they type a single character, so that I can go through the Google Docs history and see that as they're typing the document out. And this is also my way to kind of foil ChatGPT or, you know, broad kind of copy and pasting. I think there's a huge virtue in having really high performing students. So I'm very envious that Julie has like all these honors students. And you're right, like, so your department as a whole, Sheldon, is very high performing and high to get into and high to stay in. Like, it's got a relatively kind of high barrier of entry and a significant watchout rate. Those factors kind of make me think that you're primed and very suited for these grading techniques. So I very much struggle with the idea of how do I give them the opportunity to share their thoughts and give them the motivation to perform these assignments in a way that's meaningful for them and that kind of galvanizes their learning experience. And I'm sorry, that's not a question that I want to kind of ask this group to answer right now, but it's just one of those things that I struggle with a lot, and I envy some of the answers and the clarity that you guys have in your classes about these things.
I think that's I don't think that you're alone in terms of feeling that way. I just think it's one of those rhetorical kind of questions where maybe there isn't an answer to it. But I did want to circle back. We touched on this really briefly, tokens. And just for our listeners that might not be familiar with specifications grading and how tokens work, I think kind of the general thought behind the tokens is it's kind of connected to those kind of resubmissions, right? Or those rewrites, right? So can you all maybe talk a little bit more about tokens if you use them, how that works, whose responsibility that is to keep track of that? And is that an honor system based thing? How does that all work?
So I don't use tokens. I at least I don't call them tokens. I allow people to revise. They can revise as many exams as they want. At the end of the semester, two of them will be counted. It's usually very obvious which ones to count because I can see their grades, but they can tell me which ones they want to count. So I guess that would be my tokens. I call them safety nets in terms of turning things in late. I have, I think it's maybe even four different types of extra credit at the end of this semester, which probably serve as specifications tokens, which basically say you can turn in an assignment late all the way until the final exam if you do this extra thing. And that's the extra credit. So it allows them to, again, they're busy. It allows them to kind of time manage and put off something, or if they do poorly on one assignment, reflect on it later in the semester. So that's how I handle those types of revision.
I don't use tokens. The token system sounds great in a class where I could manage it, but I just don't think I could manage a token system where students are like having to then figure out how many tokens they've used or what they have. Like, that just sounds like a logistic nightmare for me for my class of this size. So what I do is I just have some allowable, like, for example, I have an attendance bin, a bundle as part of my class, like, but I they're allowed to miss up to four without me even saying anything. Like, I do not care. You don't have to tell me, you don't have to say anything to me. My class meets twice a week. That's essentially 2 weeks of missed class that they're allowed to have, because, you know, especially like last year when, you know, we had COVID running through the university, it just made it a lot easier to be more flexible about that sort of thing. And honestly, I think it's turned out to be one of the more fair policies I think I have. Just four missed, you don't have to tell me anything, it's fine. That's on top of if you have, like, you know, legitimate excused absences for sports, for, you know, life events, things like that. That's all on top of that. I also allow like a one missed homework assignment. That's just, again, you don't have to tell me anything about it. You don't have to let me know. It's like, just, I'm going to count a certain number at the end. So I build in these little flexibilities in lieu of a token system so that there is some space, some breathing room for the students. Because I recognize it, semester is stressful. It can be difficult.
I do a similar thing, and I'm working within the constraints of University of Delaware's learning management system, which is Canvas. The way that I've built this into Canvas, because I want to, for my own personal serenity, automate this as much as possible. Two ways in which I do this is, first of all, I have way more than 100% worth of assignments that the students can choose from, so that if they choose, you know, any passing percentage of those assignments, they get that grade. The other way is that I've got the assignments bundled up into groups where I tell Canvas to automatically drop the lowest N number of lowest grades. And that's a functionality that I think most faculty here know about. It's nice in that some things, for example, the readings, I've got bundled into a core group of important readings and a much bigger group of discretionary readings. And that discretionary group is the assignment group in which I drop about 20 of the lowest scoring assignments from, so that students have considerable flexibility. Julie mentioned this earlier. I do think I put, you know, high performing students in a bit of a difficult position, but the feedback I've gotten so far, because I've tried to poll the students a few times on whether they, you know, they would rather I just say, oh no, you just have to do these and that's it. The reception seems to be in significant majority that they're happy with that system. The other thing I do by using that is that it'll automatically drop a certain number of absences, because, you know, class participation is one of the assignment groups. And that way, and I communicate this and been looking for feedback about this, I say that students can basically miss 4 classes over the course of the semester, no questions asked. But on the other hand, I don't want to give them additional freebies if they have excuses. In my mind, at some point, if you, whether you have a good reason or not, if you start missing a class, you're going to start missing out on the learning experience provided by the class, whatever your reasons are. And at that point, that should impact your grade. I think reasonable people can disagree with that, but that's kind of the place my mind has settled on to manage that part of teaching.
Yeah, it's cool hearing all of your different ways of managing it. I don't know if I manage the grading scheme well, but I think that one thing I want to do aspirationally is to create a grading worksheet that the students can use to help them know what their grade is at any time, right? Like a one-page checklist and how that looks for my class of what their grade is, because there is confusion on both sides sometimes. I think that would be really helpful. We don't need to talk about assessments and attendance and all that. I think my class is quite different than the classes you two described, in that my assessments, I try to think of them as like, this person is at, I'm preparing them for a job, and in their job, they don't do timed exams. So I have 24-hour take-home exams. All of my assignments are done outside of the classroom space itself, and they generally have time, much more time to complete it than they would need. And I also never require attendance, besides my one course for first years where we do kind of have debates and talks. My thought is, if you're doing your work on your own and you want to teach yourself how the entire human body works, go for it. It's really only a benefit to come. But that has also been, it's definitely easier when you don't have to mark attendance at all.
You brought up a really great point where you started sharing feedback about specifications grading in your classes. And I'm just wondering, from all of you, can you talk about the feedback that you're receiving and what that looks like from your students? And then could you also talk about just currently what you're doing as a way to help students keep track of specifications grading in your classes, since you can't really represent it that well in Canvas?
In general, students seem to care about a lot of other things and not specifications grading in my course evaluations. I have a class, usually about 60 students. On average, I get maybe 10% that mention the specifications grading scheme positively. I can't directly track who those students are, but it tends to be from sections where students were able to make big recoveries in their grades. About 10% who absolutely hate it, and they say, death to specifications grading. And then they say, because, and then they insert a sentence that shows they don't understand the grading scheme. Usually it is possible to get a little bit screwed over with the scheme, mostly if you're the type of person who just doesn't turn things in on time. I see that as partially a flaw of the system, but also more, again, my goal is to get them ready for real life. If you're constantly turning in stuff late at work, it's gonna affect you. It usually is, negative feedback is usually accompanied by lack of understanding of how the grading scheme works. But in general, people seem to care more about how I do take-home exams. And like, it's not the biggest thing on the top of their mind.
The feedback I've gotten has been very mixed. I get some comments that are normally about the clarity of it. They're like, oh, this is like, you know, the positive comments are normally, it's very clear what you have to do to get an A in this class, right? It's very clear what you need to do to do well achieve. Some students, I've had a couple comments say like, oh, it's nice. I actually just wanted to get a B and it worked out for me. Or I just needed to pass because I just needed this class to satisfy requirements. And so it was easy to see what I needed to do that. The negative comments I get are often from, I think, from students who are like Julie said, like maybe fell between the cracks of the system, more or less, where they had like maybe like a couple categories that were really strong, but then one category that was not. So they felt cheated as a result. Even though I expressly say that to the students beforehand, it doesn't always translate to the evaluation. And I have like, you know, maybe three or four comments every evaluation that are just like, specification grading sucks. I hate specification grading. But again, also like Julie said, it's often accompanied by, you know, it's unfair or something like that, even though it's supposed to be a more fair system, right? So those are that's kind of comments I normally get about it. But actually, like Julie too said, I don't get a ton of comments about it in my evaluations. There are other things my students will complain about for my class because it's a class that they all have to take, but then they're all like super excited about the topic. But that's for another podcast, I think.
My kind of percentages mirror yours in the sense that I tend to get a very small number of students who have either not clearly understood what's going on and criticize it. By and large, most of the students seem happy. The class is a very talky class. So not only do I often bring up what I'm doing, because honestly, I'm not sure about what I'm doing. Teaching ethics, there's always an ongoing conversation about, hey, I did this. Did you feel okay about that? How do you feel about the readings? The biggest complaint I get about the class is that it's a lot of readings. And it's interesting because I've got the last class of every semester, I've given out a poll on, hey, how do you feel about the amount of readings in this class relative to other classes that have similar reading intense content? It's interesting because it breaks down in a very tidy way. So there's another question that asks, do you usually do all the readings that you're assigned to do? Or do you often, you know, kind of get by without doing all the readings? And the students who answer that they do all the readings consider the amount of readings assigned in my class absolutely reasonable. The students who answer that question with, no, I tend to not do all the readings, feel that the amount of readings in my class is absolutely too much. I publish these like with the statistical data that I have about this at the beginning of the semester to kind of warn students, hey, if you're not happy with doing readings, try to think of doing a different class because this class has readings. As far as feedback, I tend to solicit it directly with conversation, but also with polls. And I also have questions throughout the semester that are in assignments of, oh, do you feel this question is correct? Do you feel that there's a better way to phrase these questions? So there's, I hope, a constant feedback mechanism for people to voice their fears and their complaints. That minimizes the issues at the end of the semester for me.
And then what about representation in Canvas? Everybody uses SpeedGrader, right? Or do other people use other mechanisms for grading?
I use SpeedGrader, though I have I often have three or four TAs for my class who do most of the homework grading, and I just kind of keep track of how the grades are looking as we're going along. As far as keeping them abreast of specification grading, I've tried to be better about it as I've done it every semester, trying to keep things updated. I normally have them, like I say, here it is. And honestly, it's for my class, it's mostly counting, right? Like, do I have X number of homeworks? Yes. Do I have X number of assignments? Yes. It's something that they should be able to assess fairly quickly when looking. But I think this semester, I'm actually going to try, I set a deadline for myself to actually put out a, you know, here's what your grade would be if you did not take the final, you know, right before the final, essentially. So they can easily see like, okay, I'm going to take the final. Because every semester I have a couple of students who don't take it, even though they probably should have, and vice versa. A few students who took it and it wasn't going to really help them. This semester I'm going to actually clearly lay out, here's what you have right now with final, without final, and then you can figure out, assuming they pass the final. But it's tough. I was just thinking, as Julie mentioned, the worksheet, I was thinking like even just having like an app that I could use to keep track of these things would be nice. Even though that gets weird with learning management, I know that learning management has their, you know, certain requirements for how much data you can keep. But even if it's something I can personally have on my personal computer and then I could upload or easily import into Canvas would be actually kind of nice.
That would be the dream, right? Blue sky.
Yeah, blue sky. Blue sky.
Yeah, I mean, Canvas isn't the best for this grading scheme. I think because of my hybrid use of the traditional grading scale already. So they get scores back usually between 0% and 100%. That is displayed on Canvas pretty traditionally, but they do need to know what those thresholds are. I would say they are usually very aware if they make a threshold and they're all being like, oh, I need a 90. From time to time, get students who are confused about it. Generally, the first two exams, I will email students who fall into non-A categories and tell them, if you don't revise this exam, your grade will be a C or whatever it is of the grouping they fall into. I use, maybe this is too nitty gritty, but you know, there's different colors in the grading, in the grade book. I use those colors. They don't always mean the colors that they say they mean, but like blue to me means that has been a revised attempt, not necessarily that it's just late. And then I do use pink for missing or a failed attempt that wouldn't, that'd be considered incomplete.
Oh, that's a clever way to use Canvas's speed grader to your advantage. Is it helpful to create your own scale in Canvas versus the University of Delaware one that's there?
You mean for the like a final, the final column? I don't let them see the final column of percentages because it is completely irrelevant.
Okay.
I hide a, it's not a grading scale that makes sense.
Okay.
I am so envious of that.
Wow. So do you get any pushback from students? Because typically they can see that probably in other classes. So I'm just curious if there's ever any feedback on, well, I can't see the my total.
No. I mean, because they know. Wow. I mean, maybe I bring up the grading scheme more often or too much. But again, these are grade-focused students. They're very aware of what their grade is at any moment. They don't need the average to calculate for them because it would be irrelevant.
I'm a faculty member that might be thinking about specifications grading. So are there any misconceptions about specifications grading that you would want to clarify for me if I am interested in this type of assessment?
When I first heard about specs grading, I thought it was completely different. I thought it was literally teaching the test, you know, specs grading in the sense that like, here are the specs, understand the specs, do the specs. And that was just hugely just like, oh, like a moment of light bulb over my head when I realized that wasn't at all the case.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for me was how easy the transition was. Everything is the same for me. It's literally just how the grade is added up at the end. I don't think about my grading as much as we've really been thinking about it in this podcast. Like I think about other things more. Like I think more about how I teach in the classroom and if my assignments are reflective of what I want them to be learning. The grading really just comes in at the end and you can keep all of the same assignments that you use now, except that they become weighted in a different way that you get to determine. It doesn't have to be something that is based off of what society says is the way you need to determine your final score.
I think if someone was going to try to use spec grading, I think it would be a good idea to get a lot of feedback. Listening to this podcast is a good start, actually, because it is the sort of thing that you want to make sure it is a good match for your class and your what you do in your class. I don't know. I actually can say that I would recommend it to everybody who's teaching. I think it really depends on the course you're teaching. I found it works for my class that I teach. I'm thinking about actually implementing it in my lab class as well next semester, but I co-teach that class, so I have to convince my colleague to do it. So I'll be using some of these arguments and things we've been talking about to sort of convince him to do it. I think the one thing that you should be prepared for is the pushback from students. More and more we're finding spec grading across across campus, but it's not everybody has been exposed to it. So having like really clear definitions of like what everything is, which is one of the things that Nielsen even talks about in her book, like you have to make sure that everything is very clear, what they have to do, how they have to do it. And also I think it's not a bad idea to say, explain why you're doing it too, to express to them that this is meant to help you, it's meant to help us, it's meant to be a sort of system that we should all benefit from. And being really upfront about that, I think is a good way to start if you're going to implement it in your class.
Because I'm an adjunct, I do most of my class prep and class adjustment before the semester and after the semester. I put in like a large amount of work between semesters to set up the class in the way that I want to. But that has the benefit that during the semester, by dropping the lowest class engagement scores, I don't have to deal with excuses about, oh, I was late on this assignment. Can I retake this? I have a sports meet on that day, so I can't come to class. I get fewer and fewer of those emails. And as I get them, I've got like a template response that it says, don't worry about this. As discussed in this, you know, look at the syllabus. These things are taken care of automatically by the Canvas because your lowest scoring assignments in that particular category are automatically dropped. It makes my life much easier during the semester from that perspective.
Yeah, that makes sense for your grading scheme. I think the way I deal with pushback in general is people want to be treated as adults. The younger the student is, the more they want to be treated as an adult, I've found. The why is so important, right? It's not, I'm coming in here and I'm doing this because I said so. It's because engineering education literature says so, and no one will fight back on that. The second I say engineering education literature shows that, and I'll cite the papers that show that what I'm doing has a purpose and a reason, and it's to prepare you for real life and to make it so that you're going to do a great job getting a career and then staying in that career, I've had no one be like, oh, I don't want to be ready for the next stage of my life. Like, that's why they're at least in my major. So if you show that there is a very well thought out reason for why you're doing what you're doing, you can disagree with me all you like, but it's still coming from a reasoning. It's not because I hate you and I want you to fail, right? It's not because I'm not considering your feelings at all and how much effort you put into the class. It's the opposite. I don't know, maybe I'm a very emotional teacher. I'm very open, but that is, I just tell them from the first part of day one of the class that that is why I'm doing this. And it seems to get a lot more better reception.
Any other takeaways?
I'll say that my class specifically, but I think teaching generally is an activity that basically almost only has, as far as significant indicators go, lagging data, right? When a colleague asks me, how do you know that you've been successful as a teacher? I look at the student 5, 10, 20 years later. It's hard for me to know that I'm doing a good job in a specific class teaching with respect to that one student, because you never know exactly if you're impressing the correct life lessons in addition to like discrete expertise that you want to train up. But there's also kind of time management, which is one we discussed, a kind of feeling like an adult is another thing we discussed. All of these kind of tricks of how to be a good person in a job, how to be a good person in society, how to be functional and satisfied with what you do, how to get other people to be satisfied with what you do, that are really hard to know if we've taught effectively. The fact that there's some kind of really strong tweaks that specs grading is inviting us to evaluate, I think is a healthy thing to kind of take on. Just to understand, just try it and see if that seems to work out for any particular teacher in a way that might be more effective for that particular body of students. Because there seems to be, I mean, this is getting some amount of hype, right? Like, there's specs grading is the new shiny thing in education, or one of the new shiny things in education. In that sense, it's worth taking a look at what all the fuss is about. And even if, I mean, we've all adopted part of specs grading in ways that we managed to find a manageable for ourselves and for the students. That seems to be a no-brainer if you have the bandwidth to take it on. And if, as Sheldon was saying, it's appropriate for your class and your student body.
Well, if there are colleagues out there at the University of Delaware and elsewhere that might be interested in specifications grading, enjoyed this conversation, your perspectives, would it be okay for them to get in touch with you? And if so, how can they get in touch with each of you? I think that would be great for our listeners.
Yeah, with the disclaimer that I am not an expert in it at all, and I'm still learning a lot about specs grading. But if anybody wants to get in contact with me, my name is Sheldon Hewlett, and you can, best way to reach me is email. So that's Hewlett, @udel.edu.
Yep, me too would be email. So my name is Julie Carand, Karand. And my email is just Julie K, because no one can spell last names. JULIEK @udel.edu.
I'm totally following suit, because my email is also nazim@udel.edu. Just the first name, because that's enough work. However, the best way to get in touch with me is to leave a basket of freshly baked French pastry in front of my doorstep. But I will not give out my home address. That's up to, you know, but particularly motivated people to figure out.
I love it. I love it. Well, I'd like to thank my guest today. It was a pleasure having you on, and thank you so much for sharing all of your experiences. Thanks for listening to On, a Reimagined podcast, providing teaching perspectives related to instructors and students with a shift toward how technology and innovation add value to teaching and learning. If you like what you heard today, please subscribe. This podcast is where you can always expect to gain ideas from brilliant guests who will sprinkle their innovative strategies to help you add a little seasoning to your course design. Thanks so much for listening.